Did you know that Game Pass or Pass is brought to you for free because of Spotify for Podcasters? It's a totally free platform, and you can make a podcast today for free. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer. So no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else that podcasts are heard. And if you think about taking your podcast to the next level with a video podcast, Spotify can help you too. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can also earn money in a variety of ways that includes ads and podcast subscriptions. So what are you waiting for? Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to spotify.com/podcasts to get started right now.
Now time for a very, and I mean very, evil edition of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service, tell you which games to pass on to your friends, and which games to simply hide from and pass on by. I am Corey. I am joined by the man who has conquered evil, all of it. And I don't mean the Paramount Plus show, Basher.
There's a Evil Within Paramount Plus show?
No, I think it's just called Evil.
Oh,
I keep saying
I'm not watching that. Yeah, no one has Paramount Plus. That's not a thing.
I do, but only because they keep giving it to me for free, and that's how I can watch.
Don't lie on my name.
I do not have that. No, I would not pay for it. Let me be honest. I would not pay for it, but it has ridiculousness, and I love a good ridiculousness.
This is not a paid sponsorship from Paramount Plus.
I wouldn't take a paid sponsorship from Paramount Plus.
Wow. seems harsh.
Just being honest, I mean, would you? Like, there's from what I guess I'm now lying.
To watch the evil show? Like, come on. Like, it sounds like you described this evil show as perfection, so I'm in.
I don't even know what it's about.
But evil.
And I do know they have The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand. But that, I feel like that's going to be one of those
shows. He never makes bad stuff, ever.
That's going to be one of those shows, like the movie The Stand is one of those things you start watching, and then like you get like halfway through it, and you're just like, this is bad. But you've already committed so much time to it that you can't stop watching it.
That sounds eerily familiar to our topic today.
Oh, man. We're going to be talking about The Evil Within 2. But before that, if you want to let us know what you think about a game that we're talking about, did you know you can shoot us an email? Or you can even leave us a voicemail or a text message at 574-651-9256. We actually have a text message that sort of elegantly places itself into this episode, but we will not be talking about that until the end of the episode. But you can write in too. Just pull out your phone right now, 574-651-9256. Evil Within 2. Here's the details. Developed by Tango Gameworks, known for The Evil Within. The Evil Within, the first one, was kind of known to be Mikami's first game since Resident... I don't know if it's his first game, but he is the father of Resident Evil, so him making another horror genre game is kind of a big deal. This game is regularly priced at $39.99, third-person survival horror game, available on PC, Xbox One, technically not available on Xbox Series X and S, but I will be going over some details about that, because you do get some pretty nifty... bonuses if you're playing on that platform, and it is available on PlayStation 4 and PS5 via backwards compatibility, no DLC, and no cloud saves. The Evil Within 2. Let's talk about it.
So, Evil Within 2, I played this game when it first came out. I don't know why, to be honest with you. I didn't like the first one too much.
I'm with you there. I have a very, like, sort of, what's the word I want to use? Love-hate relationship with Evil Within, because it's a game that I really wanted to like, especially the first one. But that was a game that, it launched rough, is no, you know, it it was a long time ago. I believe it was a cross-gen game. I should have looked that up, the first one. I don't remember. But it was a game like, it was, most people don't remember this, but it was presented in like full widescreen, like letterbox style.
Yeah, it was a weird display.
Right. And not only, but on top of that, it didn't run well at all. So even playing on a quote next-gen console at the time, which was an Xbox One, that game, it ran like crap. It didn't control well, but it was a game I wanted to like because I liked the aesthetic and I liked what it was doing. I just didn't like the way that it was doing it. I ended up finishing that game, and over time they went back and fixed a lot of those things. And they did DLC and stuff for it. But to me, it always felt like a janky, not in a good way, janky horror game. But some people really liked that first game.
Yeah, I think it's the perfect way to describe something like it. Like, because you're gonna have a good jank, you know, like that. But the first one just never got good for me in terms of like the controls and whatnot. But I would say this one improved on that aspect greatly. So like, you play the same character, and I'm gonna say it's a few years after the first events, and this time, I guess, there was a fire in the house. He lost his daughter, if I'm correct, right?
Correct. He believes he lost his daughter. Okay, real quick. Am I level still okay?
Yeah, you're still okay.
Okay.
Believes he lost his daughter in a fire, and then his wife leaves him. So right off the bat, I actually enjoy the setting. I think it's perfect for a psychological horror, if you will. Like, it's, you're playing a character that's already kind of broken, and good reason to be broken, you know. So that I'm already on board with. And then you enter this town looking for a serial killer, so still, I'm still on board with it for the most part. But it wasn't until the game sort of opened up, if you will, for me, where I kind of started losing some interest, only because I feel like it was a bit schizophrenic in what it was trying to do. So when you're inside, I feel like it's very claustrophobic, very old school Resident Evil, if you will, at times even. But then you get outside, and it turns into kind of a choose your own adventure, like a sandboxy shoot 'em up. And I don't think I could ever really just get the two of those things down together.
I went on a roller coaster with this game for that exact same reason, because I think it starts very strong. And I think the first one started relatively strong too. And the first one felt unique, as janky and as much as I didn't like it, it felt like something that I wanted to play. The second one, I actually bought this game. I think it came out the same year as the Xbox One X, and it was one of those games that was enhanced. So it doing that dumb thing, kind of like you do with launch titles, you buy a game you're not really interested in. And I got to the open world part, and then I just stopped playing it because I didn't want to play an open world game. There are certain times that I want to in certain games that it makes sense, and this is one that did not make sense for me to be, quote, open world. But it starts off very strong, like before you get to that part with this game loves to do the turnaround. What's behind you is now different. It loves doing that. And I think it does it to a good degree and good success. But that first hour does a lot of that. And it does a very good job of making you feel uneasy. But then it sort of just drops you in this open world. And I sort of rolled my eyes and I was just like, oh, like you had me and then you lost me. But I think, to call this game open world is probably a disservice, because I don't really think it is. It reminds me more of like those later Tomb Raider games, the Crystal one, especially Rise of the Tomb Raider, which is technically kind of go wherever you want, but it's got sort of these three open, three like smaller worlds, and you can sort of do whatever you want in each of these smaller worlds, and it's more similar to that. It's not exactly that, but it is not technically open world. There just seems to be like a hour to 2 hour part where it wants to be. And then it sort of goes back to what you want it to be.
Right back to it. Right. And it's just, and that's very just strange for me, because it gets ruined the, Because the parts that I liked about it was the pacing and the full detective work of checking down the serial killer, the supernatural serial killer, and delving into the mind of the main character. But then it's like that feeling gets broken when you throw me inside the town and just go, all right, go have fun. And that's really what you're doing at that point. It's not really scary. It's not really creepy at that point. It's really just more fun. And I didn't, and I, it's just really hard for me to reconcile that. It wasn't like a, it feels like when, what A Last of Us did, I think did pretty well, with the clickers and moving around the cities and stuff. Like it always felt very, even if the cities were open-ish, it still felt very tight, very, very claustrophobic, very kind of, oh, I hear a clicker, I need to be very careful right now. And it's, you're always kind of on edge with these things. Whereas like the creatures in this and the way it's laid out, it makes it more fun action all of a sudden than it's this creepy psychological thing on the other end of it. I'm just like, it just never really worked for me.
So, again, I agree, but I also disagree because I think the game, and it's a disservice that it has a good sense of progression, because everything you just said is true, but it actually does a very good job of, as you keep playing the game, that open world does change. They do things to it to sort of make it more scary. And, you know, the first enemies that you do encounter are definitely very boring. You know, they're very easy to fight. But as you sort of keep going and progressing through the story, you definitely get some of those new encounters in that open world. And I do not know a single name of any of the monsters in this game. But there's sort of the green exploding creature, and it kind of does remind me of the clickers, or almost some of the Dead Space 2 stuff. Of they make this noise that is just truly terrifying, and whenever you hear that, it sort of just makes you freeze, and you're just like, okay, where are you, kind of thing. So it's such a roller coaster game for me, because before that, I was just like, man, this open world is kind of boring and bad. But then as you keep playing it, it gets better, and so it's a game where I started really high, but then I hit really low. But then I as it was going, it never really went back down for me. It just kept getting better. I didn't love every minute of it, but the fact that it actually took that time to go back and sort of address some of those things. And I mean, I don't know if addressing it, but the design doc for it was very unique in that it very clearly wanted to change up the open world as you keep going, because it wants you to see the progression of your story and your journey of trying to find your daughter and becoming more akin to what is actually happening in this world. And a lot of it's like self-reflective, and you know, the story about it is very much a discovery tale for Sebastian, of discovering what actually happened not only to him psychologically, but as well as just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Emotionally.
No,
I guess.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree with that. I think the game does do a very good job of, a lot of these games try to do that, where they try to show, like, through gameplay or cutscene how just scary and nightmarish the world is, and they try to make that a metaphor for the character. And it's like, and a lot of times for me it fails. I think they actually succeed in this one. Again, like I love the aesthetic. I love the character. I love the character reasoning for being here. It reminds me of Silent Hill 2 in a way, where it's like, I'm doing all this for a reason, and it's not just like the old trope of a ghost house in a movie where they could just leave anytime, but for some reason they won't. Like, you want to keep progressing in this. You want to see what the reasoning is for all this madness. So I think I agree with that. They do a good job at just making that very apparent.
Yeah, and that's kind of the strong point of the game, which is kind of surprising me, because the second one is a little, I don't want to say mundane, because that's not the word I want to use. It's a little more straightforward. You know, the first game, you know, the whole STEM research project, you know, if you play these games, the first game is extremely hard to follow to me. It's just, it's so out there, and they're so focused on building lore that it lost me in many. Like, I played and finished that game. I could not tell you what happened in it except the very basics. The second one, it's easier to follow, which I think some people will not like because it's just a tighter narrative and a tighter world. But at the same time, like, my conclusion for a lot of it in terms of like story and atmosphere and the way that the game plays is that if you liked that first game, you're going to hate the second one because it's more mainstream. Like, I don't know how else to say it other than it's easier to pick up and play, but the way it sort of achieves that is by a tighter narrative and a tighter design doc that is not nearly as experimental as that first game kind of was. But I think that was a lot of the reasons why I didn't like the first one. While I can see and respect the risks, or whatever you want to call them, in that first game of doing something different and unique. It just did not work for me. It was too far, and my biggest thing is it did not play well to me. I did not like playing that game. I did not like the way the weapons felt. I did not like the way that how sometimes your goal was to not actually fight but to run, and it didn't always communicate.
That's the worst. That's the absolute worst.
I don't mind that, but it just was never communicated well. That I should be running, kind of thing. And so I think that this game is more mainstream, and it's not as creative for that reason. But because of that, I actually ended up enjoying it a lot more than I did that first game. I think it definitely still has its issues. A big caveat for me is that one thing that I have to stress is that I think that if you cannot play this game on a higher end machine or a Series X, I think it could be detrimental, because this game runs at 30 frames technically on consoles. But if you have a Series X, they actually put a unlocked frame rate mode in it, which I believe was mainly for the Xbox One X, because it did not run at 60, but it definitely ran at 30, kind of thing. It wasn't perfect. But on the Series X, if you toggle that, you're basically getting 1800p 60 frames per second. It's not perfect, but it also, if you have a VRR display, which I do, it's basically a lock 60. And just, you know, I started playing this game at 30 frames per second, and I did not expect any type of Series X enhancements, and it doesn't technically have them, but just kind of messing around with the options and stuff, I discovered that, and the game just, it does not feel very responsive in 30 frames. This is one where the 60 frames per second just makes a huge difference. I toggled it back to 30 frames, which is always a dangerous thing to do because you get kind of used to it, but even just like controller latency does not feel great at 30 frames per second. So that was a huge factor to me to why I was able to keep playing this game, was because I felt like I was actually in control of the character, whereas at 30 frames, I was not. I think it's kind of similar to your Outrider situation. You know, you played on the base Xbox One, and it's, you know, sometimes a frame rate can really make or break a game, especially when it comes to you, when you need to be accurate, because this game is not about, you know, it's not, what's the word I'm looking for? Accuracy is not easy to obtain in this game. It is deliberately kind of heavy to sort of make you miss your shots and sort of force you to sort of play by its rules in a good way. It's not a situation where you get frustrated with it. It's part of the game design. That went a long way for me. Which is a weird sort of bullet point to put on it, of just like, you should only play this if you can play it on PC or a Series X, because you get those enhanced benefits. But I guess I just got to put it out there.
I mean, I played on PC, so I can't even speak on what it would feel like on a lesser rig or console. But I personally I don't think any issues with it running. I think by the end of this journey, because it is a journey, I felt like I reached a point with the progression where it definitely felt like. See, in a lot of games, I want to feel like the superhero by the end of the game, because I unlocked everything, I got a lot of the items and upgrades and whatnot, and I feel like I should feel like way more powerful. But I just felt like the more capable I got in Evil Within 2, the less threatening the overall game was. So like the aesthetic of like the like one thing I do truly love is how, like you said, the city, like this area changes over time. Like at one point it just becomes pure blackness. At one point the fog settles in. At one point like the bridges, like ridges and rolls go down. Like the entire like parts of this place really change for you after a while, and I like that a lot. It's just, I guess I was becoming, the better I got at the game, the less scared I got of the game. And that was kind of taking me out of it, because I was playing it less like a, let me around this corner and hope I don't disturb something way, to a, yo, bro, I just got a shotgun and fire rounds, let's go.
Yeah, for sure. I agree with that, but I think that's by design.
Sure.
I don't know if it's the right answer, but no, definitely the.
No, it is.
Yeah, as you know, I don't know the name of any of these things, but you get like the long haired three headed chick that's got like a saw blade as a hand and stuff, and as you progress, you can encounter her or it more frequently, but by the end of the game, it's just like, I've got this sniper rifle that's super powered. I got this pump action shotgun that's super powerful, and I want to kill it because I want the experience, kind of thing. Whereas before, I was terrified of it. And I don't know if it bugs me the way it bugs you. I definitely noticed it, but I guess I was kind of okay with it.
It's not a wrong decision by any means. It is not. I don't want to say it's a bad decision either. It's just one thing that it's one of the few things about this game that really just kind of that took me out of it every now and then. I guess I was so enamored by the beginning of the game. I just really wanted to, whenever I got pieces of that back, I'm like, yes, more of that. But then it turns into a collect-a-thon, like not in the sense of a Assassin's Creed level thing at all, but definitely a an action game where it's like, all right, I have all this equipment. I'm gonna go back and get these things for an upgrade, and it turns into more of a search and shoot than a horror game for me. And I think it's just something that I personally just didn't really love.
No, yeah, I sort of had a similar trajectory in that I sort of spoke about this, but how I said I had like a roller coaster of the game of. It starts off kind of linear, then it opens up, but it really is, there's the middle of this game is pretty linear. While you sort of keep getting dumped back to that open world, every time you go to a mission, it's a very, very linear mission. And that's, I really enjoy those parts of it. The open world sort of felt more like a hub to get there, but there was also, you could explore and find new things and get more experience points and stuff like that. But definitely as it sort of, once you're going towards the end of the game, it does sort of open up in a way that's kind of like when a game warns you, like, you know, if you go any further, you're not going to be able to go back, kind of thing.
Right.
And the last sort of quarter of the game feels that way, except for the last boss, which I have to say I super enjoyed the last hour of this game. I thought it was very unique and cool, and I was glad I saw the end. I don't think it ends in any type of, like, shocking way, but it was a very satisfying ending. But no, I had a very similar thing in that, you know, I super enjoyed the linear parts of it whenever I was dumped into a new area, and then when I pop back to the open world and it sort of changed in a way maybe I didn't expect, or changed in a way that I enjoyed, it was cool to explore for a little bit, but then it does sort of, it's kind of side quest heavy, which is weird to say, because the side quests aren't really that important. Like, you don't have to do any of them, but they give you rewards like a bigger ammo pouch, or sometimes you even get like weapon upgrades. And there's actually a side quest that I missed. Like, there's these containers that I couldn't open because I'd missed this side quest. And so it's just kind of a strange game that is sort of, it can't decide if it wants to be linear or open world. But while I think games like Rise of the Tomb Raider figured that out and just did it better, maybe it's the aesthetic, maybe whatever it is, the setting just worked better for that. So I guess, you know, we're sort of on somewhat opposite ends here, but I am on the side of, even with all those caveats, I'm for play it. I actually super enjoyed 85% of my time with this game, which, not every game is perfect. Like, I don't want it to sound like, you know, because, you know, there's some games that we recommend wholeheartedly, but no game is perfect. And while I did get frustrated with this game, I finished it, which is, and it's not a short game. You know, even if you were to fly through this game, this is a 15 to 20 hour experience. And I enjoyed a lot of my time with it. There was times that I sort of put it down and I was just like, man, like I just did not enjoy what I was doing for the hour or whatever. But I super enjoyed a lot of pieces of it, especially some of the villain stuff. Like there's a villain that has like this photography or this camera that he likes to take photography with, and he sort of uses that to manipulate the
world.
I like
that.
Yeah, like that stuff was really cool. I really enjoyed that stuff. Would this game, like, you know, I look at stuff like Dead Space 2. Dead Space 2 is a game that it's not open world, but it is linear, but it's somewhat, you can kind of go back and forth between areas. And that game from start to finish, that is a borderline perfect game to me. This game does not hit the highs of that game, but it definitely, its lows do not, never made me want to turn it off and not go back to it. I always wanted to finish
fair,
it.
Yeah, fair enough. So I agree with that.
Again, not perfect, but I'm on the side of, I think you should play it. I do think if you played that first Evil Within and you loved it, and for whatever reason you didn't play the second one, maybe you shouldn't, because it's a different game. I think there's going to be a camp of, I think some of the more serious fans or serious horror fans are going to play the second one. Like, this is sort of neutered and too mainstream, and you're not wrong, but I think in terms of a game, I think it just worked better for me. But if you played that first one and hated it and just didn't want to finish it, you can play the second one and be fine. You don't really need to know what happens in that first game, and you can pick up from the context clues what's actually happening in the second one. And
that might be the best part of the narrative for me. Like, you really don't need to play that first one to get on board with this character and his reasoning for being here and doing what he's doing. And I completely, you're absolutely right where it comes to a matter of preference. I would say if you didn't like the first one, I would almost say this is a must play because the first one had so many experimental issues, with this being way more, for lack of a better word, gamer friendly. I think this is one more people can easily pick up and figure out if they like it or not.
Yeah, that's how I feel, is that it's, I do not want to gloss over the fact that it is very different, and it's, again, neutered is sort of the way that I want to say, like, it is a more action-friendly game. I don't think this is a smooth transition the way that Dead Space 1 to Dead Space 2 is. Like, you've got people that have Dead Space, you know, the debate of Dead Space 1 versus Dead Space 2, and I'm a very much a Dead Space 2 person, like, but even people that enjoy Dead Space 1 can still play Dead Space 2 and understand that the core of that game is still in there, but it's sort of evolved in a way that that was very smooth and everyone can still enjoy. I don't think this is nearly as elegant as that. I think there will be a hard divide for people. And again, I don't think it's always a good thing. I don't think it's always a great thing if a game sort of changes its design doc, but the difference for me is that first game was extremely rough, and even people that like that game will admit it was extremely rough at launch, and they ironed out a lot of the issues, but just from a design perspective, it didn't do enough for me to forgive its faults. I understand that some people will, but the difference in this is that I think the second one, while its faults are still there, they're not nearly as egregious and you can easily overlook them. Whereas in that first game,
absolutely,
I could not overlook some of those issues.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in agreement. This is definitely something you should give a try. I think more people than not are going to have fun with this one.
Well, there you go. So when it comes to The Evil Within 2 on Xbox Game Pass, give it a shot. Check it out. I think it's worth it. You don't get a lot of horror games these days, so it's cool that this one exists. And I do want to stress, if you can play it on a Series X or PC, because I really think that frame rate really does help. But you can totally play it at 30 frames and not want to rip your hair out kind of thing. So, but on that topic, we did get a text message from Anonymous, because there was no name with it or anything.
Wow, okay.
And it's two words and one punctuation. I'm sorry, three
oh,
words.
Oh, man.
Dead Space Remake ? Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that means that you want us to play Dead Space, because that is technically on Game Pass. I don't know if that means that you want us to talk about the Dead Space remake. The news that came out, I'm going to go with the latter and say that you probably want us to comment on the Dead Space remake news versus playing the original Dead Space. Maybe we will at some point. I don't know. I think that might be worth revisiting. But so if you,
I'll play through that again.
And I think that's,
I like the first Death Space.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I'm at with it. And when, EA. So yeah, EA recently announced that they are doing it with EA Motive, which I believe has only made Star Wars Squadrons. But so Visceral is no longer a thing. If I don't know if some people know that, some people don't, but EA closed Visceral after Dead Space 3. That is a very long tale of the quality of Dead Space 3 was a well-made video game, but it was not the video game that Dead Space fans wanted. So I think a lot of people didn't pick it up, and that was sort of a time when games were very, to get a game greenlit in a lot of ways, you had to have a thing. And Dead Space 3's thing was co-op and weapon building, which just did not fit with Dead Space proper. But that's neither here nor there. But so EA Motive will be doing a remake of the original Dead Space. It's not a remaster. They've specifically said remake. And so what do we think about that?
I think Dead Space is one of those beloved franchises, and I think for good reason for the most part. I always enjoyed my time with Dead Space. Even the third one, I thought the worst part of the third one, honestly, was the plot and the narrative more than anything else. I thought the gameplay wise was fine. It wasn't what I wanted out of Dead Space, like most Dead Space fans, but it was definitely like a decent playthrough. I'm personally not very excited for it. So, like, I don't think it's a weird decision to me, because usually they do things like this to gauge the interest in the franchise, but we already know Dead Space is a franchise people want. And EA already has come out and ruined not only the franchise, but the development team that made it by basically saying, like, you're not selling 5 million copies, so that's not enough for us to keep doing this. So it's like, to do a remake of a game that, again, is going to only garner a smaller fan base, like, compared to like your FIFA franchise, like, I think it's kind of pointless. Like, but I don't know. That's just me.
Pointless is not the word I would use. Unnecessary is the word that kind of comes to mind. And okay, I say this as a Dead Space 2 is possibly a top 10 game of all time for me. Like, if it's not, it would be pretty close to that top 10. I absolutely adore that game. I've played through it probably a dozen times. I still enjoy that first game, but the second one is just more for me. I like the variety more. I like the enemy variety more. I just enjoy it more, but I still really enjoy that first game. And a couple things that come to mind, like, I find it strange that even with Dead Space 3 being what it is, in that it's a very well-made video game that just isn't, it doesn't make a lot of sense in the context of the genre and franchise that it exists of. It takes the story in a very unnecessary direction that's kind of weird. It changes up the gameplay, like, for unnecessary reasons. And it reminds me a lot of, like, the Mass Effect 1 to 2, in that those games changed drastically from a full-on RPG to a more action-based RPG. But I think it was for the better. Dead Space 3 didn't need to do that, but for whatever reason they did it. But whatever. It's done. It happened. It's neither here or there. But when you think about Dead Space, like, you can still boot up that original game and totally get it. Like, it doesn't look amazing, but it doesn't look bad either, especially if you can play it on PC, where you can crank all those things up. You know, those games are much more forward looking, and we're getting to that point in console space to where, you know, Microsoft's doing a lot of things with backwards compatibility for old Xbox games and 360 games to boost the resolutions and the frame rates and all that stuff, but this is not one of those. But if you have the game on PC and you boot it up, it looks really good. And so when I think of the reasons to remake a Dead Space game, I don't get it. The game is, like, the game's really not going to look that radically different, right? Like, it can't. Like, technology has come a long way, but so what? It's going to look at, four, you know, we might get some ray traced lighting, and we might get some, you know, Atmos audio, and 4K 60 frames, but it's still going to look like a Dead Space game. Whereas when you know, I think of some of the better remakes, you know, you get stuff like Demon's Souls and Shadow of Colossus, and those games are full-on remakes, and they look drastically different because of the technology of the time and just how much better those teams have had. But like you said, Visceral's gone, and this is a new team. This is not the Dead Space team remaking Dead Space in a vision that they wanted. Or this isn't like Doom 3, where Doom 3 took, you know, it was 15 years later and technology had come such a long way that, you know, it's not even the same type of game. It's more of a horror shooter versus like an action shooter. And while that game isn't great, it still stands on its own as very unique and different. I just find it very hard to believe that that this Dead Space remake is going to be radically different. And I don't understand why you don't just remaster even though I don't love the third game, remaster that trilogy to gauge interest. Because like you said, this feels like a, if you want to reboot Dead Space, reboot Dead Space. Remaking it to me screams, we're going to put some money into this to see if this IP still has any room. While, because you've got Resident Evil 2 and 3, you know, they remade those games in a kind of similar way to sort of change the perspective with the technology and all that stuff. But those games are even older. And while those games work really well in the remake fashion, Dead Space, I just don't see them making radical changes to it. So you're just going to get...
No,
go ahead.
Absolutely not. You're right. That's kind of my point. Like, I don't... The whole purpose of this is to see if people will buy Dead Space. And it's like, no, we already know people will buy Dead Space. And you know how many people would buy Dead Space. And they already know they're upset, or not upset, but they're not satisfied with the amount of people that will buy Dead Space. So, like, I personally don't think making better graphics Dead Space is going to all of a sudden make it sell 6 million more copies. Unless it's just trying to capitalize on the current Resident Evil revitalization. I mean, you're still going to get a niche audience for Dead Space, and they're not happy with that audience already. So, like, to remake, I feel like they're just treading new, they're repeating the same mistakes. They're going to remake Dead Space. It's going to get good interest. It's going to sell decently. All the fans are going to come back, obviously. They're gonna make the second one, and then by the third time, it's gonna be like, I think we can make another $3 million off this. Let's add in all this other stuff and just screw it all up again.
Yeah,
that's what I see it happening.
As a Dead Space fan, I just don't. They're gonna try to charge $70 for this, right? Like this.
Oh, absolutely.
I just, even as a fan, the $70 price tag, it has made me question a lot of my purchases. You know, it's going to be tough for me to throw down that amount of money day one. You know, and maybe they won't. Maybe they will realize that this is a remaster, or not a remaster, this is a remake, but it's not a full price game. Maybe it's $60. You know, it's just, they're going to have to do, I need to be able to look at the trailers and look at the gameplay of this game and see, like, okay, like, this is radically different in a good way. And I just don't see the technology being there for this to just be better. I just don't get it. It doesn't make a lot of sense as a fan. I hope it's great. Like, I really do, because I absolutely love Dead Space. It is a marquee horror franchise for me, but it's just, like, I think we both said, it's a very confusing tactic to not reboot it and remake it. It's very weird. So we'll see what happens.
I see technology there. I don't see the vision there. Right. Like, you know, I don't see the long-term investment there. Like, you're going to really dig knee deep in a Dead Space all of a sudden just to get to a point where it being a horror game, have a niche market and be like, well, you spent all this time, all this money. We want to make this as profitable as possible. So let's screw it up eventually. Like, I don't see the whole point of the exercise, but I will play it. I mean, I like that first Dead Space.
Yeah, we'll see. I hope we're wrong and that it ends up being amazing, but that's kind of the initial feel of it. So, all right, let's get out of here. You can find us Forlog. Nope. What's the ad? I know this email address. gpopfans@gmail.com. You can shoot us an email or text message at 574-651-9256. You can leave us a voicemail, text message there, whatever you want. Comes right to us. We'll read it. We'll talk about it, as we just did with Mysterious Texter. Thank you for that. Always a good thing to reach out and get a little feedback and know that people are listening. So there you go. But all right, that's going to do this episode of For the Love. Nope. For Game Pass or Pass, you can. Nope. All right, I'm going to do this right. Okay.
All right. We're almost there. Finish line is in sight.
That's going to do it for this episode of Game Pass or Pass. We will see you next time with Steep.